What's going on, Bourne family? And thank you for choosing to click on the first ever episode of Bourne's Talk. I'm very excited to bring this to you. Bourne's Talk is a project I've been working on for a while. It's my podcast featuring guests, sometimes just myself. We are covering everything powerlifting, a load of stuff mental health, and everything in between, whatever it is we feel like talking about. I am far too excited for this. Like, I'm so stoked about this. And with that, I'd like to introduce you to a friend of mine. He is the man, the myth, the legend, the King Cobra himself, Mr. Pete Rubish. What's going on, Pete?
Not much. I actually just got done baking a blueberry crisp, so I can't eat it yet. I have to let it cool overnight.
Man of many talents.
I try.
That's sick. Okay, so first and foremost, Pete, I would just like to take this opportunity to extend my gratitude to you for being on the show and for your support of Bourne. Like, it really, really does mean so much to me.
Yeah, no problem at all. It's nice to be on.
I'm super excited for this one. Like, I've been waiting for this. I am super stoked. So we'll just jump straight into this. So let's get started with you. So for anybody who doesn't know who you are, do you want to introduce yourself? Tell us what you do.
Yeah, so I am a 242-pound or 110-kilogram competitive powerlifter. I've been training for almost 11 years now, competing for about 7 years. And in competition, my best lifts are a 733-pound squat in knee sleeves, a 446-pound bench, and an 848-pound deadlift. I have pulled 920 pounds with straps in the gym, deadlifting. And in about another month here, I'm going to try to deadlift 1,005 pounds, which I would be the fifth person to ever do that, and the lightest by 100 pounds, and the youngest. So powerlifting's in my blood. I love to lift heavy.
That's insane. Like, 1,005 pounds. Like, for a regular human being, that's insane. Like, what, if you don't mind me asking, at the moment, how are you approaching this? Obviously, we've seen your YouTube videos and stuff like that, but what's your mindset like going into this? Because 1,005 pounds in, what, 8 weeks is that, I think, you want to do it?
Yeah, it was and 8 weeks.
That's mad.
Yeah, I think when I pulled the 920, I felt as though I had about 25, 30 more pounds in the tank. So really, I look at it in my head as if it's about 55, 60 more pounds than what I've ever been capable of, which is certainly ambitious. And I've had, you know, I just had a rough training session the other day, so it's like, those doubts are going to creep in at times, and they always do, it seems like, during a meet prep or with whatever goal you're chasing. But if I stick to the plan and take care of everything I need to take care of as far as what I'm eating, how much I'm sleeping, supplementation, all those things, and my training, then I feel like I have a pretty good shot at it. I'm just trying to peak properly. So what I do is I, like, cut my volume back as I get closer to the goal. And when I cut my volume back, I seem to get a big strength burst or whatever. And we'll take a shot at it.
Dude, it's absolutely crazy. I mean, I remember watching that video of your 920, and it flipped. Like, considering the weight it is, like, 920 pounds is just crazy, especially at your body weight. But it just flew. Like, you see guys, like you said, that have got, you've got, what, 100 pounds, maybe 110 or so, less than them, and they're deadlifting around 1,000 pounds, but these are strong men. Like, how does that feel, knowing that you could potentially be, like, in, because obviously you're one of the pound-for-pound strongest people on the planet, and that's insane, but how does it feel knowing that you very soon will be breaking that 1,000-pound barrier? At what, like, 24 years old, is it? 25, 24?
Yeah, I just turned 25 in August, so it's pretty remarkable to think about. I know most of the people who've done it actually weigh like 400 pounds on the dot, and the lightest guy weighed 350. So it's crazy to think about. And, you know, I think I'll hit it, but even if I didn't, it's only a matter of time. It's going to happen sooner or later. So this has kind of always been like my personal Everest, my lifetime goal. And to be this close, I just figured, let's put everything I have into it and take a good shot at it now. So it's almost one of those things, though, where it's like with these goals, the more humbled I approach it, the more humility I approach it, the better. When I start getting, like, too arrogant as far as my ability, what I've done, I always seem to have a poor training day that brings me back down to earth. And I feel like that's kind of what happened the other day. So I'm trying to go in with a little more respect to the weights and what I need to do.
I'm like I said, this is crazy. Like, obviously, I've been powerlifting for what, about 7 months now. So my numbers wouldn't even be close. Probably like half of what you're doing, if that. But it's what you've just said actually leads me into one of the questions I have written down, and it's obviously a lot of us know you for your washer and dryer stuff down in the basement, just lifting really heavy weights and screaming so much intensity, and that's what a lot of people love you for and know you for. But I've been watching you for years and years on YouTube, even before I got into strength training, like back when I was playing basketball, because there was just something about you. And it was, I think the reason I related was, yes, you were extremely strong, and that was awesome. But at the same time, I felt like there was more to you. So, like, I just loved the character behind you in those videos and being able to see you do that stuff. But it just felt like there was so much more to you than just lifting. And that's why, one of the reasons why I respect you so much is because you are so humble in your approach, yet you are one of the elite. And it's really nice to see. So if you don't mind, would you mind giving us a little insight into Pete the man as opposed to Pete the powerlifter? Like, how come you are so humble despite being one of the strongest people on the planet? Like, what goes through your head? I'm trying to word this question right. So what goes through your head knowing that you are one of the strongest people on the planet, but keeping yourself grounded, if that makes sense to you?
Yeah, I feel like you have to have a certain level of confidence, but every time I get too arrogant or whatever, think too highly of myself, my training always seems to go south. It's just, and that's just the training side of things. Life in the same manner works that way. It's like anytime you think you haven't made and you can do it on your own, and like if when I'm not leaning on my faith, my life will start to like crumble around me. That's how it always seems to work. It's just, I'm not perfect. I've made plenty of mistakes. And I'm never going to be perfect, but you try to set certain morals and values that you can live up to, and you try to live up to those. Even if you fall short sometimes, you try to live up to them. And when you're doing that, everything seems to go better. When you veer off course, it's like a domino effect where one thing leads to the next thing, and everything starts to kind of crumble down. So you almost learn that humility through your experiences and things that go wrong in your life. I'm not one who learns from someone telling me how things work. Like, I personally have to like make the mistakes or experience it myself before I learn that lesson. And whether it's that hip injury that I suffered that basically kept me out of competing and squatting for a year and a half, 2 years, or just relationships or whatever, it's like when things aren't going right, you have to step back and be like, what am I doing wrong? Why is this happening? And oftentimes, you don't have to look any further than how you're handling yourself and what your demeanor is. So I would say having a little bit of humility is going to get you much further.
Absolutely, I 100% agree. Like, obviously, you see some of these top athletes in various sports, and I find that powerlifting is such a really nice group of people. Like, everybody respects one another, they want to see one another do well for the most part. Obviously you get your anomalies, but for the most part I think everyone is very supportive. But you see athletes in other sports and they're just, the arrogance astounds me. And I appreciate, like you say, you have to have a certain level of confidence, but it's just a whole other level, and it baffles me. Like, these people are superstars and we treat them that way, but I think sometimes obviously it can go too far in that they get caught up in it themselves and then things can go south. Then you see so many athletes fail after they've done so well, and I think a part of it does come into the fact that they don't have those morals and values that you were just discussing. All they want to do is make a ton of money and be really, really good, but it's the other things that they don't have.
Yeah, it's easy to veer off course, especially like if you are a professional athlete and you have all that money and you essentially have, you can go and get or buy whatever you want or need, it's even tougher. And everybody gets humbled, though. Everybody gets humbled. Like, if you think
it you're comes awesome, around, doesn't it?
If you think you're awesome, you'll get taught a big lesson. Just a good example of that, honestly, like, I like the guy a lot. I'm a big fan, but, like, even Conor McGregor, he is not the same person he was before he lost to Nate Diaz, because he thought he was invincible, and then he got put in his place, and it's like, he's still arrogant, he still comes across that way, but he's much different in the way he handles himself, and you can see it, because he got taught that lesson.
I mean, It was mad, wasn't it? Like, obviously, you say with Conor McGregor, he was extremely arrogant before that fight. And he still is, but when he had his ass handed to him, like, even the interviews afterwards, there was just this certain level of, like, him being humble that I think nobody really expected to see from him. Because he'd been so arrogant, and I get that fighters are in the run-up to fights, but it was just so different to see that, like you've just said. Okay, so I've got a few questions here, and it was... So they're going to be kind of a mix of, obviously most things are going to be powerlifting, but I want to kind of channel into not so much the mental health side of things, but just the way you think about certain things, because I'm personally intrigued, and I think a lot of people will be intrigued into the way you go about things and the way you think about things, if you don't mind. So one of the questions I wanted to ask was, what do you think has been the biggest thing that you've learned from powerlifting? Because at Bourne, I'm using powerlifting as a platform for raising awareness of mental illness, because I feel you can use powerlifting to really, really develop someone's mental health from the lessons it teaches. But what do you think are the biggest lessons that it's taught you?
I think the first thing that comes to mind is that no matter what you're going after, no matter what you want in life, it's going to take time. Nothing happens overnight. You're not going to be great at something overnight, no matter what that is. You have to put the time in. Consistency and just longevity, those are the keys to anything. You could apply that to whatever goal you have, whether it's, you know, being a great MMA fighter, being a great power lifter, winning Mr. Olympia, climbing Mount Everest. It's like, you can't just go and do it. You have to build up your skill level. You have to keep going through, keep moving forward even when times get hard. It's like, that's how anything in life works. So just, you can't give up. Even if you have a bad day, you have to rethink your plan. You have to keep moving forward. And over time, you'll get very far. But nobody gets there without paying the dues. Everybody has to pay their dues. So that's probably the biggest lesson you can learn. I'm 25. I've been doing this almost 11 years. That just goes to show. It's like, I started deadlifting 320 pounds. That was like my one rep max when I started picking up a barbell for the first time. So it's like, now we're looking at almost 700 pounds later is the goal. That's 11 years of work. It's just, it takes time, it takes consistency. Yeah.
This is one of the things, like, my training partner and myself, obviously we're a big fan of yourself and a lot of powerlifters, and you see all these guys that can just put up what seem like the most astounding numbers, but I've been doing this for 7 months, so I watch your deadlifts and I'm like, Christ, that looks easy, but like you said, you've been doing this for 11 years, and I think it's very easy for people on the outside, like myself, that are just starting to watch videos of these guys lifting just crazy amounts of weight, but I think we forget that, because we see it so often now with social media and stuff, it's difficult to sometimes remember how long people have been doing it, and we might not always see that side of people, in that they might not be talking about how long they've been doing it, or we might not get the insight into their training and stuff that some people don't give us, and I think it is very easy for people to get swept up in seeing all these fancy lifts and all these amazing one rep maxes and stuff, but then you don't always see the work that goes into that. Obviously some people will show it, like yourself, you've got your videos, but I think a lot of people will just see these numbers, like the Eddie Hall 500 kilo deadlift, for example. Like, that video went viral, but people aren't going to see the work that he's put into that, because a lot of people won't care. They just see this man lifting 500 kilo and that's it.
Yeah, that's actually... Man, I would love to join him, but I don't know, that might be a little further off. That's an incredible number. I can't even imagine how that feels. So I'm gonna worry about trying to get to a grand first. And I'm not gonna lie though, I have thought about that number a lot as well. And I'm gonna do everything I can to get there.
I mean, once you've hit 1,000, that's not going to be too far off. I mean, that's what, like 456 kilos, 1,005 pounds. So that's not too, I mean, I know it's going to take some years now, especially at the level you're at, but you're 25, like you said. You can easily do that.
I'm just hoping I go to Giants Live this coming year. I don't know. If I pull 1,000, I'm about 99% sure I'll be there, but I would love to go up against those guys and just be...
There's no way they can't bring you out if you do that.
Well, 15,000 people, I've never lived in front of that many people. And I heard the crowd, I was like, that would be awesome. I want to do that. Yeah. So.
I was meant to go to that this year, but unfortunately we just didn't go because of work commitments and stuff. But I remember seeing the videos of it and watching Facebook Live videos and stuff, and people were just... It was nice to see so many Brits coming out for strength sports, and it was just mad. Like, I didn't even realise there was that many people, so it would be so sick to see you come over and be lifting with these guys despite weighing like 100 pounds less. That would be crazy.
Yeah, I feel like strength sports are bigger in Europe and Australia especially. I feel like Australia is where strength sports are the biggest, and then Europe even more so than the US, but it's even picked up over here. Like, if you would have had a 1,900 pound total at 242 3 years ago, that would put you second. And now there's going to be like five guys who are at 2,090 or above. So it's crazy. It's just blown up. I see so many more people coming out of the woodwork all the time who are really strong, and it's gotten more competitive, much in the same way that MMA has. No one can hold on to a belt in the UFC anymore because the level of competition is so high that it's just what separates them is not much. So people are beating each other for the title all the time. And powerlifting's getting, you know, competitive on its own. I don't know if it'll ever be as big as MMA, but it's just it's cool to see the growth.
Yeah, I mean, it's grown a lot in the last couple of years. I mean, like I said, I've only been properly powerlifting, so to speak, for 7 months or so, but I've been doing powerlifting movements and studying a lot of things from when I play basketball, just because I knew it would translate to basketball speed and explosiveness and stuff like that. But so what do you think has been the main contributor to people getting into powerlifting? Do you think it is that you can see progression quicker than you can with bodybuilding, for instance, or do you think the power of social media has come into that? What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I mean, social media definitely plays a role, but at the same time, I think people like quantitative results. Like in bodybuilding, it's all what you see in the mirror. It's what everybody else sees, so it's not as like definitive as far as the results. Whereas in powerlifting, it's like improve your numbers. It's real straightforward. Like you get stronger. That's how you win. And I think everybody, even bodybuilders, like, you want to hit PRs. Hitting PRs feels great, personal records. And I think that drives a lot of people, that motivates a lot of people. So that's part of it. I also think now the movement towards raw lifting where people aren't wearing the suits, and we've seen such an improvement in the physiques. Everybody now, like these guys I went up against in my last competition, everybody in that top five and everybody pretty much at the meet was like shredded, you know, 10% body fat, 250 pounds of muscle. It's like these guys look like they could step on a bodybuilding stage now. So it's people are starting to respect that now, where they actually look the part and they have the strength. And that appeals to people. They're like, all right, I can still look awesome and focus on getting stronger. People for so long had that visual in their heads of like, here's the guy with the gut and he weighs 400 pounds and he's got, you know, he's not aesthetic looking or whatever, so...
Yeah, of course.
We're kind of getting away from that. And that's bringing a ton of people into this sport.
I think that's awesome that people are finally starting to realize that lifting heavy does not necessarily mean you have to be power, have like this power belly thing going on. Like, you can be shredded to the teeth and be jacked as fuck, but you can still lift crazy amounts of weight. Like, you don't just have to look strong, you can be strong as well. And I think that's important. I think everyone wants to be strong. Like deep down somewhere, everyone wants to be strong, whether it is mentally, physically. But if you can be physically strong, I think that gives you so much confidence. And then to have the looks to go with it, I think like you were saying, like it's blown up so much. And I think that's fantastic because people are really starting to get that confidence in themselves from powerlifting. And that's what I love about it. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, everybody wants to more or less taste power. Power is a very motivating thing to have, and it's like one of the ways you have power is to get stronger, get bigger. So it's like that also makes a lot of sense as far as why it appeals to people, and it does work wonders for your self-confidence. Like you get stronger, you improve your physique, your self-confidence goes way up, and that's been a big thing for me. Like I was not always who I am now. It wasn't easy for me to talk to people. It wasn't easy for me to, you know, do all these things. And now it's just second nature. But that took years and years. I used to just be like the quiet kid where I didn't have a ton of friends. And I'm still introverted, but I'm comfortable speaking to people. And that wasn't a thing growing up. That wasn't a thing. High school, I was just on my own. People pretty much left me alone, and I just did my own thing. But I didn't have that confidence. You know, I didn't start dating or whatever till I was like 19. I was like, you know, a late bloomer and stuff. And it took me a while to get that, but I gained it through the weights first. And then once I started seeing what I could do with myself and the respect I could command, it grew from there. So that's also a big thing. I've talked to young guys like coming up who are going through the same things that I went through when I was their age at 14, 15, 16, whatever. And it's kind of cool because it's like I was in their shoes at that age. And to look 5-10 years down the road and see how far I've come, it's just, it's really cool putting it into that perspective.
And you know what, I have to find that I do that with myself sometimes, because a lot of the things that you've just said, like I've dealt with myself, and I still struggle to this day talking to some people. If it's a complete stranger, I just kind of go into my shell. It's funny because I'm either really into my shell or I'm just extrovert and I'm fine with it, but it depends on the day, I think, sometimes. And if you don't mind, I'd just like to touch on something you've just said about that. And those times of adversity that you faced where, when in high school you weren't around people, like you were out on your own. I mean, when I was in college, I used to spend hours and hours just shooting free throws because that's what I wanted to do. Like, I wanted to play pro ball. And I remember the things that like went through my head now, how I overcame them. But what would you say in your life have been some of the biggest things in terms of adversity that you've had to overcome? And how did you go about overcoming them? Because I think for a lot of people, it's really, really difficult. And you can see, like you said, 5-10 years down the line, you see how much you've changed, but it's very difficult to be able to get your mind to look 5 years and know how far you've come. Because I think it's very easy to get caught up in the present. So I'm just curious how you went about fighting those hard times in your life and how you got through them.
It kind of ties into what I said earlier, where I learn from my mistakes. Like, I'll make mistakes, and I might make a mistake a million times, but you know, I'm learning more and more as I go along, as I go through life. There's so many things that we encounter along the way that are new to us, and it's just that life experience that changes everything. I can't say personally that I have experienced horrible things compared to anybody else. Like, I've experienced what I would consider pretty normal life events. Nothing like, you know, I haven't been in a car crash, I haven't had a horrible illness or disease or anything. Nothing outside of the ordinary, really. And we need to put it into that perspective. It's like, we're not going through anything any harder than what anybody else is going through. Everybody has their struggles. Everybody.
Yeah.
You just don't see them. Okay. For the most part, people aren't putting on Facebook or whatever that they're going through a hard time and they have this going on or whatever. We just don't see it.
No,
but when you kind of put it into those terms of knowing that everybody else has these same issues and goes through these same struggles, it makes it easier to deal with. And that's one thing, just your perspective of it, is like, literally everyone is going to go through this to an extent at some point or another. So there's not really like huge, significant life events that stand out as far as like that made me who I am today or that had such a profound effect. There's certainly been bigger things, but it's all like a culmination together that has made me who I am, just learning from everything I've gone through along the way. So it's kind of a very general answer there, but that's just how I feel about it.
I really appreciate that answer, though, because one of the things you just said was that you have experienced things that everybody else would feel, and I think that's important, because you might see people that might feel that they're just on their own or that nobody else has ever felt these things, and that really upsets me, which is exactly why I'm doing what I'm doing with Born, is trying to raise that awareness. And because I suffer with mental illness myself and I'm kind of documenting all that stuff, like you said, people don't say that they're having a shitty day. So if I have a shitty day, I will be recording it or saying that I've had a shitty day, because it happens. Like, it's as real as it can get. And I think the video I made that I sent to you originally, that This Is Me video, talking about being sexually abused and bullied and suffering with anxiety and eating disorders and stuff, the response from that was insane, and there were so many people came forward and said that they'd suffered with similar things. But I think it takes somebody to talk about it, no matter who it is. Like, I'm just a regular ass person, but it takes someone to talk about it to then give others the confidence to talk about it as well, I think.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, okay, I've had in middle school and high school, I had panic attacks. I had anxiety. I've had, you know, not even what I would say is like diagnosable depression, but obviously we've all had times where we're depressed. And so I don't look at those as like major things for me. It's like there's hundred millions of other people out there suffering the same thing. So just keep it in perspective as far as like, you're not alone. You may not see, or you may not be able to identify people in your everyday life who are going through that, but I guarantee you're walking by them every single day and you don't even realize it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think there's a lot more people that suffer with not necessarily mental illnesses, like diagnosable mental illnesses, but just with mental struggles. Like you said, so many people are going through the same things, especially in the world we live in now. I think it's, you can walk down the street and you might see like 100 people that have got various different issues, be it depression, be it anxiety, whatever it is, but you will never know that, and you will never ever know that unless they told you about it. And I think that's one of the things to remember for people, is just everybody has their story, don't they? So instead of just judging someone, you think, okay, I don't know that person. And I mean, in this world, it's very easy to, like, there's a lot of judgment, obviously. It's very easy to judge people because people are becoming more and more opinionated. But I think being able to understand what you've just said there and just putting things into perspective and realizing that a lot of people are going through similar issues, I think that's really, really important for people to remember. So I appreciate you saying that on this, because that's one of our messages, and I am really glad you said that, because people need to remember that.
Yeah, I mean, it's just not advertised. That's what I would boil it down to. People aren't advertising their struggles. Not many people, you know. You're one of the few. I've brought up some of mine off and on throughout the years, but it's like, for the most part, people aren't just coming out and, you know, voicing their problems. So yes, remember that.
So I've got Kate, my fiance, and I always think that behind every great man is an even better woman, because that man needs somebody to support them. I'm curious, what impact has Kelly had on your life, and how does she help you with, obviously I know she's very, very supportive of your goals, but I'm just curious, how does she help you, and how has she made such a difference in your life?
Yeah, she's been there through all this recent success. I kind of got back on track with lifting and everything November of last year, or even a little earlier than that. She's been there every meet, every competition. We've been all over the world, just having that backbone of support. And then, you know, the little things, like having that person to film for you and never criticize my training or what I'm doing. You'd be surprised at how much of a difference that makes, just to have someone who kind of lets you do what you need to do and live your life how you need to be true to your passion. That goes a long ways. So that's probably the biggest thing. She's forced me to grow as a person in ways that are not related to lifting at all. I'm a sinner. I've made mistakes, and she's forced me to look at myself on a deeper level than I ever have, to identify things that I need to change, to actually start to think about how I want to be known, what morals I want to live up to, and values, and all these things. So those are really what I would say are the biggest ways that Kelly's helped me.
I think that's incredible. Like, it's so nice to hear you say that stuff, because obviously Kate's had that similar impact on my life. And again, she records stuff for me if I don't want to, or she's always been there no matter what. When I wanted to go off and play pro ball, she was there. And I moved away for 6 months from her, but she was still always there. And I think that's amazing. So shout out to Kelly for that, because she deserves some credit there, because that's just, it's just incredible that she gives you all that support. So I'm curious, Pete, I have this question for you, and however you want to answer it, obviously we're all going to have a different answer to this question, and I'd quite like to ask everyone that I speak to, and I'm curious, what is your definition of the word strong? I don't mean like dictionary definition, I mean your personal definition. How would you define a strong person?
First thing that comes to mind would be somebody who's living their life true to their values and their passion. This is what I'm passionate about, and I've set my life up in a way where everything is built around it. So it's like, I mean, for instance, doing these interviews or doing like a seminar, it's easy to talk about powerlifting. It's easy for me to get into it and help people out because it's what I love to do. So I would say somebody who's living true to their passion, who's living a true life to what they believe, that's somebody who's strong.
Because I love that.
that's what I think a successful life is, where, you know, you're living how you know you're supposed to live. Like, if I was, and there's nothing wrong, like, if someone's in a bad situation and they need to have whatever career they can get, or, you know, not everybody's going to have the opportunities and chance to make a living out of their passion, but I think you should at least pursue it and give it a shot. And that's what I've done. There were a lot of times where I was like, I don't know if this is going to turn out, and I don't know if this is going to happen, and it's kind of all coming together now, and it's paid off. But years ago, I wasn't sure, but I at least took that shot. And looking back, I never would have to second guess myself because I did that. So I think that's... even if you can't do it, even if you can't make a living out of your passion, try to give it a shot. Try to go somewhere with it. And if it doesn't work out, there's nothing wrong with that, but you won't have to second guess yourself.
I mean, that's important though, isn't it? Like you've just said, like, if you give it a try. If it fails, it fails. You've learned from it, and then you can develop from that as a person. But it might work. Like, so you, yes, it's a big risk, but it might just work. And that would be incredible, because then...
I agree with you in that I feel like success isn't having all the money in the world, or the cars, or clothes, or all that other materialistic stuff.
I think it is being happy, being able to wake up happy every day and doing what it is that you love, or even working towards doing what you love, because I think that that's still a success in itself. Obviously, I think it's almost impossible to obtain a certain amount of success, because people always want more. As people, it's just natural, like, we will always want more. So that perfect success that people might want and we might see isn't, I don't think it's necessarily realistic, but I think you can be successful without quite being in the position that you want to be in, if you understand what I'm trying to say. So I think as long as you are developing, and as long as you are doing something you enjoy and something you are passionate about, like you were just saying, I think that is success in itself.
Yeah, just take a shot. Nothing to lose.
No, not at all. So you are a coach as well. I'm curious, how do you feel that your method of training differs with your clients? I mean, not necessarily you, but the way you coach your clients. How is that different from other people? Because obviously your training is very different from a lot of people. I'm curious, does that translate to your clients as well? Or do you have them doing things completely different to what you do?
It depends on the client. I don't even break it down into whether someone takes gear, you know, steroids, or is natural. Mm-hmm. Because every individual is different. So what one of my clients can handle as far as overall volume, another one might only handle half of that. And there's factors like how old they are, how busy their schedule is, and just simply what they want to do. Often I'll come to a client, I'll say, I mean, I don't like to train clients more than 5 days a week, but I'll say, do you want to train five? Do you want to train four? Do you want to train three? What have you been doing? What's worked for you in the past? And we'll look at all these factors and I'll come up with something, but it comes down to the individual. And for me, my strength is at such a high level that the amount of volume and the amount of frequency that I can handle is way lower than most people. For a deadlift workout, it can take me anywhere from 6 to 9 days to recover from that until I can go again. So I'll train lower body once a week, and I will train upper body once a week. Literally, that would blow people's minds. That's not much. That's what works for me. And then I throw in 2 grip days where it's literally just... so that I get, and I'm not going to drop the bar. But for like most of my clients, I would tip 4 days we started them out with. I find as a general, generic number, 4 days seems to be optimal for the highest number of people. Some guys 3, some guys will go 5. But anywhere 4 being what works for us. And we'll break that down into 2 bench days, 2 upper body. I call them upper body or bench, either way. And then 2 body days. And that, from just the most... general standpoint possible, is what I find benefits the most people who are trying to get stronger. Now, you got to kind of tweak it. And what's really interesting is the guys I've worked with for over a year, where we can start to see patterns emerge as far as this works for them or these exercises work for them. And everybody should try to do that with themselves. Like the way I train and the exercises that I use, I could tell you why I do every single exercise. And there's not many of them. Like on that one lower body I do, lower body day I do per week, there's 3 movements. That's it. So I do literally 3 lower body exercises and it never changes, because over the years I've found those work the best for me. And another factor you have to look at is what exercises can I do that won't lead to injury. So my first thing with my clients is we got to keep them injury free. or we're not going to progress. So I look at the movements. Does this rile up a certain area? Does this injure a certain area? Then we're going to take that out. We're going to replace it with something else. That's the first step. Take out the movements that cause you pain, and replace them with something that doesn't. And from there, you can tailor your routine even more. So it's just a number of factors with each individual.
It's really interesting to hear you from a coach's perspective. Obviously, you can hit some insane numbers, and we've seen a lot of your workouts. But from a coaching perspective, I love to hear the way people go about coaching things, because I think everybody has like a different method, and I think that's why a lot of people obviously are drawn to various different people, as well as just their personal accolades. I think the way that they train people obviously is important as well. So I'm curious, if you had a client who wasn't overly confident, let's say they were going for a PR, but they didn't quite have that confidence in themselves. And the reason I'm asking this is because I ran a certain powerlifting, I'm going to call it a method, not necessarily a program, and it really hit my confidence hard. Like, I have got self-confidence issues anyway, but my strength went down, I think. But I think a big part of that was just the confidence in myself. So have you ever had any clients that have had kind of those confidence issues, or how would you address that kind of thing?
Yeah, there's certain times where I feel like a client holds back or doesn't push themselves to the capability I know they have. So with those guys, it's just a matter of like letting them know, like, you can do this. I'm gonna put the exact number of reps I want you to do, the exact weight, give it everything you have, even if you have to like pause at the top of a squat or whatever. But for the most part, I find when people are working with me and having my presence, I don't run into a whole lot of that. People seem to like respect what I'm doing on my own, and that gives me the credibility where they feel like they feel safe in my hands as far as what I'm doing with them. So I would say now I don't run into that a whole lot. People seem to believe in what I'm telling them, what I'm having them do, and it just kind of translates from there. It's very, very small number of people who I work with who don't get the results that I would say we seek out. I would say 9 out of 10 people, we get pretty darn good results. And there's always that 1 in 10 who, for whatever reason, things don't seem to work out how I wish they would. But that's kind of the difficulty with like online training. I'm not actually there with them. So, you know, somebody could veer off course and I may not know it. But at this point in time, based on what I'm doing with my training, I feel like most people don't seem to have too many issues with that. And I don't know whether that just is from having a coach or what it is, but that's my honest answer to that. I don't run into that a whole lot.
I think it will give people a confidence boost, especially one-to-one training. Obviously, having someone that deadlifts 900 plus stood there teaching you how to deadlift, you're going to do well, I think. Like, you're going to have that confidence to keep pushing and keep pushing, because that person has that experience of having like a freakish amount of weight being put on the human body, like, for a human to pick it up. I think it just gives people that confidence, doesn't it?
I think when people see you're improving on a consistent basis, like if I go into every meet and I'm still hitting a PR total, and people see every meet, every lift is going up, that's what gives them the most confidence. So when they see you're well-rounded and you're constantly improving and you're doing the same exercises that you're prescribing them, then, and you're open about your methods and everything you do, that's kind of one of the things with like my YouTube, when I show the food and everything, and just the little things, people see more of me, and that even gives them more confidence, because to them, you're being more honest, you're being more yourself. And just when people see all these little things come together, that inspires confidence in them.
Yeah, I think it's easy to relate to people as well, isn't it? Like, they can obviously see more of your life than just the powerlifting and just the PRs and stuff. Obviously, they get an insight into you. They see Kelly on the channel as well. And I think to see Pete Rubish the person as opposed to just Pete Rubish the powerlifter, it's just something nice for people to watch. They get an insight into the people they look up to. And I think that's a fantastic thing about YouTube.
Yeah, people, when they see every little aspect, it seems to help, and you're not constantly pitching things at them and trying to sell them. They appreciate that too.
Yeah. So I'm curious, talking, going back to like a more powerlifting bit, have you got any exercises that you feel that every single beginner or intermediate should have in their program? Obviously, apart from the squat, bench, deadlift, do you feel that there's anything that would supplement those exercises to help you get stronger that could be a staple in most people's training that aren't advanced, I'm saying?
Yes, there are two exercises that I feel every single person, regardless of weight, build, anything, should be doing. I feel everyone for a lower body exercise should be doing what I call a 45 degree barbell back raise, also known as a back extension, also known as what's the other one for? I don't know, but 45 degree barbell back extension. Basically, if your gym might have one, I don't know, it's like a 45 degree angle here. Most people will do their body weight and they just come up like this, or they'll hold a 45 pound plate and do them. I put a bar on the ground in front of the machine and I will deadlift that up, and I can just overload that really heavy, and it kills my hamstrings, hits the low back, has a very high carryover to the deadlift as far as the lockout and speed off the ground. It's one of the best exercises I've ever discovered, and it works so well for me. The second one would just be dumbbell benching. Nothing has increased my bench more than dumbbell benching. So what I'll do with that, I'll kind of give you a little more insight here. I'll start like an 8 to 10 week meet prep, and I may start with like the 100s or the 110s, and I'll try to get as many reps as I can for two sets. And then every week I go up 10 more pounds. So first week I'll do the 110s, the second week the 120s. And by the end of the meet prep, I'm doing the 200s for as many reps as I can get. And that gets my bench up every single time. It always works. So I think dumbbell bench has a very high carryover to bench. And overhead pressing, I haven't seen like any carryover from that. Many of my clients, I haven't seen any carryover with it. So I don't prescribe it a ton. Sometimes I'll prescribe it just as variation, and it keeps the shoulders healthy. But overhead press really doesn't increase your bench like you think it would, and vice versa. Benching will not increase your overhead press. So I'm not real sold on that. I've ran it and it just didn't do anything for me. I ran a cycle of overhead press.
I love the fact that you recommend that back extension, because when I was playing basketball, I did them, like you said, with a 45-pound plate for a while, and I noticed some carryover into my vertical jump and my straight line speed on the basketball court, and I started moving on to doing them with dumbbells. Obviously, I'm not doing like 315 with them with a barbell, but I was doing dumbbells all the time, and the amount of looks I used to get for it in commercial gyms was amazing. Like, people didn't know what I was doing, but I always found that in terms of developing explosive power, it worked really well. And now I'm thankful for that, because my lockout, I don't think I've ever had an issue at lockout, ever. And I would attribute that to playing a big part of that, just the years of hammering that out as well. Obviously, it wasn't necessarily for hypertrophy or for just constantly pushing that strength barrier, but I think doing it regularly, like twice a week, it definitely helped a hell of a lot. So it's nice to see. And I think, obviously, some of the numbers you put up with that are just crazy. I don't know how that thing doesn't fall underneath you, but it's mad.
I'm playing that myself, but we'll see if it ever does here one of these days.
It'll make for an interesting video anyway, won't it?
Yeah, cool to have a video, so.
Yeah.
Maybe give up over 500 pounds, we'll see if... I don't know.
That's going to go viral when that happens.
I'm surprised it's holding up.
Yeah, that's insane. So, I have this question for you, kind of more for me than everyone else, but obviously it's going to benefit everyone else as well. I compete for the first time in a push-pull meet in 4 days, and then I've got a meet in 2 weeks' time. These are my first meets. Is there any advice you would have for beginners that are going into their first meet, or people who are thinking about doing their first meet? Is there anything you would recommend?
Yeah, there's a few things. So, everybody thinks they're going to lift more weight in the meet than they actually will. Whether you're a beginner, whether you've been competing for 5 years, you're not going to do as well in all likelihood as you think going in. Biggest mistake I see with people is they way overshoot their attempts. You want to open really light. Like, you want to open with a weight that you could hit on your worst day relatively easily. And people don't do that. I'll see people grind out openers, and I know they're going to be in big trouble. So biggest thing is, like, almost lowball your attempts. You're going to be much happier going 9 for 9 or 8 for 9 and hitting most of your lifts than if you miss like half of them. So just don't get too ambitious with the attempts. In all likelihood, you won't hit more than you fit in the gym. That's another thing. You might actually hit less than you fit in the gym. So that's the biggest thing I always see. Some general advice I could give: the day before the meet, I would try to drink like a gallon of Gatorade. Like, load your sodium, and the good way to do that and load your liquids is to drink Gatorade. I find it just, it tastes better than Pedialyte, so I can drink more of it. But I literally have a gallon of that Friday night, Friday throughout the day. I want my urine to be clear all day. And then on meat day, I drink a ton of Gatorade as well to get the sodium in. And then some other things I'll do on meat day, you can buy a bottle for like, you know, 10, I guess you guys have the pound over there, so about 10 pounds. You can buy a bottle of magnesium. You can buy a bottle of potassium. And I would take two of each of those, so four total every 2 hours to keep your electrolytes high as far as that goes. And then also I take Animal Pack, a packet of them. It's like basically 8 pills in a pack, multivitamin, everything is in there. I take that before the meet starts, and then I take it after bench. So I'm doing all these vitamins and these electrolytes basically to keep my electrolytes high so I don't cramp and so my performance doesn't drop off, my energy levels. Same with the Gatorade. You want to be hydrated. So those are the biggest things. And then during the meet, a great thing to eat, I find, tuna packets to get the protein in, and then eat them with like crackers. Like, I don't know if you guys have them over there, but Cheez-Its. It's just carbohydrates and sodium. So that's one of my go-to meals, eat tuna packets with crackers. And if you do all those things I just mentioned, as far as drinking the Gatorade, taking the vitamins and magnesium, potassium, and then eating that, you will have the best performance of your life. You're going to feel incredible. You won't have a drop-off in performance. So I really hit on that at this last meet, and I'm going to be doing that every meet going forward. Just best performance of my life, and I had endless amounts of energy.
I'll definitely be implementing that, especially at the full meet, because I have no idea what to expect at all. Nothing. I mean,
it took me a while to figure this out, but I mean, I'm not exaggerating. I felt so good this last meet. I feel like I could have done another meet after the meet. I nailed it as far as electrolytes, liquid or fluid, and then just food. The biggest mistake people make, they don't get enough of the fluids in. So I would try to get fluids with sodium, which is why I go with the Gatorade. But if you do that, you're going to be feeling awesome.
But I definitely will be doing that. So thank you for that advice. And I'm sure a lot of people will appreciate that as well. So I have one last question for you, Pete, if you don't mind.
Okay.
And the question is, what is the legacy? Like, what do you want to leave? What mark do you want to leave on the world? What do you want to leave behind?
I guess I want to push the barriers of human potential past what they are now. And Eddie Hall's making it really hard on me to do that, but I'd eventually like to like deadlift more than anyone's ever done. And to do it at a lighter body weight too, because a lot of people bring this up and they push for me to go up to 275 or whatever, but the amount of, I'll just be open with this, the amount of drugs I'd have to take and the amount of food I'd have to eat to do that would come at a huge cost to my health. And I'm not willing to do that. I would feel so unhealthy, and it'd take a lot. I'd have to pay a steep price to do that. So I'm pretty comfortable with where my weight's at. I walk around about 245 pounds, which is basically 2 kilos over my weight class. So it's like, I want to keep my weight down and still show that you can still be really strong. You don't have to like balloon up to hit these numbers. I'm 6 feet tall, so I feel like 245, 250 pounds is about perfect for my frame. And I just don't want to pay that much of a price to go up in weight, even if I would be stronger. So that's kind of a loaded answer, but what it boils down to is I want to push what humans think is possible. I want to be the strongest person as far as the most weight ever lifted on the deadlift. I want to break all these world records, and I want to show people that lifting isn't everything as well. Like, being a good person, having values, evolving as a person, that's pretty key. Like, you could be awesome in the gym, but if you're not helping people in your everyday life, if you're not growing on an individual basis outside of the gym, then no one's going to respect it. No one's going to look up to you. And that's what it boils down to. Like, we often think of this as a selfish pursuit, an individual pursuit, but when I realize how many people are watching and how many people are inspired and motivated by what I'm doing, it kind of it puts it all into perspective where this really isn't all about me. And so you got to kind of stay true to that base and know that it's not just about you. But I think it is very cool to think like I'm pushing what the human body is capable of. And that's really what motivates me.
I mean, I can't think of anything more perfect to end this podcast on than what you've just said. Obviously, you inspire a lot of people. And I think I'm not even going to say anymore because exactly what you've just said is a perfect way to finish this. So, Pete, I will let you go. I really, really do appreciate you giving me this time. I can't thank you enough. I apologize to Kelly for taking you away for an hour. I really do. But thank you so much for this. I will continue to follow and hopefully we can... This will give some people some insight into yourself and people can learn a thing or two from you. So again, thank you. I can't thank you enough for this. I really do appreciate it.
Yeah, you're very welcome. It was a great interview. So thank you for asking me such good questions. And I think this was probably the best interview yet. So
no, that's nice to hear. Thank you so much for that. It means a lot to me. It really does. And I'm thrilled to have had you. I was saying to Kate earlier this morning, I couldn't have even dreamed of having anyone better and someone that inspires me more as my first podcast, so we've really set the bar high here, so thank you for that.
You're welcome.
That's awesome. Thank you so much, Pete.